This is May the 15th, 1990. This is Earl Mann. I'm talking to Wilmer Grenham between Sparta and Moores Hill. And we're recording some information for the Dearborn County History Project. Wilmer, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were born and when, and a little bit about your family life, say from around 1915 till you left home.
I was born in Ripley County, just across the line from southwest of Moores Hill, in December 19, 1899. I attended school in Dearborn County at what was known as District Number 9 Elementary School, and until about 14, when I went to high school in Moores Hill, and I lived on a farm, which in those times were, compared to now, was very, very difficult times. You had to have, we had a farm on which we was the general conditions, and otherwise, in other words, you raised your stock and your livestock, both the cattle and hogs and poultry, and in order to exist, because you didn't always have conditions where you had money, and you had to make out but on your own as a rule. At that time, there was no welfare, of course, no Social Security or anything like that. And when I got a little older, so that I could go out, I went out and worked on jobs some. And my first one of any amount, anything, I worked for on a contractor who built a bridge on what is now 101. And I don't know just what the year was, but about 34 it would have been, I got a job on the state highway. I worked on the state highway from then until 41, when I took a civil service examination and got onto a job as a clerk in the Railroad Retirement Board for the U.S. government. And then I transferred from that to the Treasury Department, after being with the Treasury Department a short time, I got transferred as a gauger and then inspector with the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax Division of the Treasury Department, which is an Internal Revenue Service, and I was with them until October the 6th, 1967,
okay,
when I retired.
All right, let's go back just a little bit.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your education.
After we got through elementary school, I went to the high school in Moores Hill, and graduated from high school in 1918. And then, of course, the high school has now been, I don't know just which year it was, that there. It's now part of Dearborn County, South Dearborn. So I'm an alumni of the Morris Hill High School, which ceased in about, I think it's about 79, maybe, that they went from there to, I'm not sure about that time, but when, and then it went to move to South Dearborn, which is the South Dearborn division of the high school at the present time.
Can you tell us anything about the college at Moores Hill? Do you remember anything about that?
Yes. There was a formerly college at Moores Hill, and it burned down. They had a fire, and after they had the building, the main building, burned, they were never able to get the thing started again. Yeah, so they moved it to Evansville, Indiana, and from there it has from a college out of, I don't know just what year or what it was, well then it's become Evansville University.
Okay, you know something about the beginning of things like the telephone to your area and the automobile and the radio. Can you tell us a little bit about some of that?
The first telephone I remember, the people of the community set it up themselves. They set poles and put a single wire on them and run it into a little exchange, what they call a little exchange in Moores Hill. And it was with a single wire with the ground, and that's kind of a telephone we had from then until after we got electricity. After electricity, well, then they got a telephone system, a rural telephone system after that. This telephone was a rather crude outfit because any call that's on the line, it rang in all boxes. So the telephone was pretty much of a community system. Most everyone that listened in if they wished, because there's no other way. That's the way it had to be.
Could you call other communities on that telephone? Could you get to Aurora and Lawrenceburg? The first one?
Not right at first, but then they finally, when they got a line, they came out to from Moores Hill to Aurora and Lawrenceburg. But then they could get transferred. The operator in Moores Hill could connect us with the other lines. But not right at first, they couldn't. But they finally, it soon got so they could.
How about the first radios? Remember anything about those?
Oh, I don't know just when it was, but the first radio, I don't remember. I can't say just when it was now, but there were...
Did you build any for yourself?
Huh?
Did you build any crystal sets?
No.
Anything like that?
No. But, never built any.
Or battery?
Bought a little, had a little battery set, the first radio we had. And you had earphones, you listened with earphones.
Very many families have those? Did very many families have those? Radio sets? Battery sets?
Not at first. They were a little slow developing too. A little slow. There weren't too many I had them right in the beginning.
How about the first automobiles?
The first car that we had, my folks bought a Chevy touring car. Had a Chevrolet touring car. 1916. It was the first car we ever had. And
were you a mechanic?
Nah, not a good one. Not a good one, but then you had to learn to help to be able to, of course they were rather simple then, and you had to learn to take care of them yourself. Do most of the operations yourself.
How about roads?
Roads were very difficult. Our roads, the county line from Moores Hill south to where I live, it was a mud road originally. And then they gradually started the farmers would haul stone and they would crush the stone. Well, and first they were napped by hand. They hauled these stone and scattered them on the road, and then they sledged them first, and then some would nap them a little bit on top, what they call napping. That was what break it from the larger sledge pieces. They would nap them. They had what they call a little napping hammer, and they would break those up into smaller pieces, and that's where they built roads at first. Before they got the stone, got the roads all stoned, so you could get through, they used to cut down cedar trees. They'd cut cedar trees and lay them across road, and then cross them the other way also, where the roads got, where they got so deep that the horses and wagons couldn't get through, they would quarter them with the cedar trees in bad places. It was crude happenings that way. We never had any school buses at that time. I had to walk to school over to the elementary. Of course, I'm getting this all mixed up now with the other. Most of the time I walked to high school too.
How far was that?
Two and a half to 5 mile trip to 2.5 each way to high school.
Where did they get most of their stone for the roads?
Most of it came from the hills, all from the hills and from the creeks and the hills in the community, because there were for that time. Of course, then later they developed quarries, of course, to get them out of the quarries.
Some of these stones come out of the fields?
Yes.
The hills?
On the hills.
Yeah.
The fields that had hills on them. Well, then they were stone that began to show up on those side hills and from the creeks. Because I know we hauled, and my father and I, haul stone and build a stone pile right up at the county line, and then they set a crusher, a portable crusher, there and crushed them and then scattered them on the roads after they got away from sledging them by hand.
Do you remember when they first started delivering mail the rural areas?
I remembered, but I don't know the year. I can't tell you the year now. Not sure when it was.
But it was before World War I.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
How'd they deliver that? The roads were bad. How'd they get it out here?
Horse and carriage. There's a horse and sometimes a horse and buggy. And in the winter time, or when the roads were bad, they have what they call a carriage, and they use two horses.
Did you get newspapers at that time?
I can't remember just what we finally got to, so we could get a newspaper, and we got it through the mail. Didn't have any deliverages other than that. They came by mail. But I don't remember just what the year was. I never kept any record of that, and I can't tell you when the year was.
Do you remember if those were local papers like Lawrenceburg and Aurora, or were they Cincinnati or Indianapolis papers?
Daily, what we called a daily, was from Cincinnati. But we got the local from the Register. I think the Greenham's family, some of the Greenham family, probably has received a Register ever since it was published. I don't think they have ever, but what, there's always been someone that's received it.
What about farming in the 1920s? Did the gasoline engine change that? Did you get tractors in the 1920s?
No. We don't think we had if we did, it would have been a very few. They didn't come along till in the 30s. It was mostly all horsepower.
Do you have any surplus crops to sell?
Oh, yes. Yes. Always tried to raise some wheat and corn. Not too much of it sold, but they always had try to have little to sell. But the main thing was to have it so you could have your flour and food products. Yeah, that needed for that. You always had some surplus.
Did they bring groceries to you, to the country?
Yes, there was some. Some of them, a few of them, they would have what they called a huckster, and he would had a closed wagon, that he would drive around with a team of horses, and he'd probably make one trip per week. They'd come around and make deliveries once a week.
How about jobs in the 1920s? Was that a pretty good time for people on the farm and looking for work?
No, not too good. Not too good. Work was rather scarce.
Did it get worse with the Depression coming on?
Very much worse. Yes, indeed. Much worse. Very bad one. Depression.
Can you tell a little bit about the first Depression years, the beginning, around 1929 or 30 up to about 1934 or 5? Remember anything about that particularly?
Well, I know that there were so few jobs and work that it was very difficult to get any kind of work, and unless a little road work in our community, in our ways, unless a little road work came along, as some construction like that or road repair, you were just about hardly had any work whatever. And that's during that time is when we hauled out these stone, gathered up these stone, got them out and to sell to the county for road repair, road repair, what we did get done. There was hardly any other work because there were no factories close, and no transportation to get to factories. Very few people had cars, and you couldn't get to but there wasn't anything going anyway. It is when the Depression came on.
Could you still sell your surplus crops? Were there buyers for them? Like your corn, wheat?
You could sell some. It wasn't as small as low price, but you could sell what little you had. But you didn't have much because it was horsepower until they got tractors. There was horsepower, and of course there were small amounts growing.
Did that improve any in the late 1930s?
When it began to improve a little bit, well, after they got tractors, they began to grow a little more. But then they got to growing too much, and then of course price went bad then.
But that was after the 30s.
Mainly after the 30s.
What about medical care out in the country like this? Doctors, home remedies, things like that. What can you tell us about that?
The doctors at that time, their practice, they went to the home, as a rule. They would come see you at the residence, and until they started building the hospitals or a small hospital, then they wanted you to come to them. But originally, they would come to the residence if you could have them afford to have them come. But as rule, they did, because many of them worked and never got any pay for it. But they practice anyway. They tried to help you anyway.
Do you remember any home remedies? Things they used for?
Yes, there used to be some home remedies, but we didn't practice too many of them.
For cold? Did they do anything particularly? Or cold, except wear it out.
That was the main thing, because there were, I don't know of any. They used to have. There was a remedy. They had a turpentine and lard that they mixed some way, and then they'd use on your chest if you had a cold. They'd rub it. And I don't know. There were some others, but a lot of people had different things. But I don't.
Do you remember any epidemics, flu epidemics?
Yeah, there was a bad flu epidemic in the during the First World War, but it mainly affected the camps where the soldiers were. They had a lot of trouble, and the local people. Of course, we had flus, but you just had to wear them out. There was no a certain remedy for them.
Okay, Wilmer, tell us a little bit about the organizations you belong to.
Mainly, I've been a member of the Masonic organization since 1925, and I was master and worshipful master in 1929 and 30, and then up until about was active all the time until about 41, and then I was out for about 5 years, and when I was away from here, and when I in Washington D.C. and Chicago, and then after I got located back here, well, then I just started attending Lodge again, and I've been active ever since. I became, I was elected treasurer in about 1952, and I'm still treasurer. I've still been treasurer ever since that. And I attend many local Masonic lodges, as a visitor, and I'm very appreciative of the Masonic order.
Was the Grange very popular in this area?
I don't think so.
I don't remember it
being very popular here.
How about Ku Klux Klan activities?
Well, they tried to get had a little organization around, but it never developed very much. Never got very strong around here. It was rather weak. I don't know of it being very strong around here.
Were your parents very strict when you were growing up?
Well, my parents, I would say no. No. They were not too strict. No.
Can you tell us a little bit about something that activities on the farm, like, say, a butchering? Can you describe anything like that?
We always had cattle, both cattle and hogs, and especially poultry, and we butchered. We did our own butchering, butchered our own meat, and prepared it, smoked some, and ahead of. A system, I forget what they called it, of salting and preservation, and prepared it, and also cold packing meat, put it in canning, or so as to have meat the year round, and then we also raised quite a bit of poultry. We even had small incubators in which we hatched, set eggs, and hatched our own chicks, and raised our own chickens, and sold quite a bit of fryers. Even raised more than we kept for the sold the pullets, but for laying stock. We even raised enough so we had some to sell. The butchering was usually there'd be a neighbor or two go together, so you'd have some help on the butchering system.
Was there very much lumbering throughout this area?
Not too much. There are always some, but it's rather small amount. Not too much around this. I don't know what this percentage would be, but it was a small amount because there was a veneer mill at Milam, a small veneer mill, and then of course there would be some small mills, some what they call sawmill, that they would saw lumber for residents who wanted to build maybe a house or a building. They would saw some lumber out for residential buildings.
Did you ever attend a barn raising or a house raising?
Barn.
This is side two. I'm talking to Wilmer Grenham between Moores Hill and Sparta on the 15th of May, 1990. Wilmer, we were talking about lumbering, and you were going to tell us about a barn raising.
The owner who was building the barn, he would get the timbers, get his timbers, and get them in condition so that they could be usually they would have them partially cut and set and mortised, but they would mortise the joints and then put them and put so they could put them together, and then they would put the that would be what they'd call a bent. And then they would erect that bent. They would, when it comes to raising, they would have enough help, and they would raise that bent up and set it and tie it and brace it. And then they would raise another bent. And then they would use timbers between those two bents and put them together. Now, originally, they did that, it was all wood. They would mortise the one timber and then mortise an end that would fit into that mortise, and then they would drill a hole and put a wooden pin in it, pin it together with wooden pins. And then they, as a rule, they would get these timbers, get them set. And so when it comes to raising, they would mainly would be raising these bents and fastening them together, and then they'd have it ready and so they could put rafters on, erect and get it ready for a roof. The main raising of a barn would be to get those bents all up, get the frame so they could have the frame all up ready to then put the rafters on. I never was at a barn or a house raising. I suppose they'd go about it somewhere near the same way, but I never was at, never had anything to do with a house raising.
What kind of roof did they put on?
As a rule, there were wood. There was wooden shingles, wooden shingle roof on houses. But barns, they finally went to metal, sheets of metal.
Before the metal, did they make their own shingles around here?
No. Very few. There may have been a few slabs, but they would, back to the old original slab shingles, but most of them, in my time, you could buy sawed out shingles. They'd buy them from a lumber company.
Okay. What about early threshing of wheat? Can you tell something about that?
Yes. Yes, I did it myself. I did that. I'll go back to the time when they used binders to cut the grain, put it in sheaves, and then they shocked it and set it in. As a rule, they shocked it in the field. Then you'd come along with a thrash machine. A thrash, what was known as a separator or a thrash machine, and at first they were hand fed. They would bring these bundles, sheaves of wheat, and they'd throw them onto a table, and you'd use a knife, and you'd cut the string. And then you'd feed that into the separator. Then they, from that they went to they put a built a self feeder and put on it, and it had band knives on it that cut the strings, and then they fed them into the feeder and they were fed into the separator. And at first the straw just came worked through the racks and came out the back, and they had a spread it by hand, build it into a stack if they wanted in a stack, or however they wanted to do with the straw. Then they went from that to they get the blower on the back, blowed it out. And I first thrashed with the steam power. We used a steam engine for power to thrash with. And then it went from that to a tractor. Used a tractor to pull a separator to furnish power, and I've worked with both steam and power. There were both individuals who had an outfit, and they would go around and thrash for people, and then the communities got so that they'd buy a thrasher or a separator of their own and use a tractor to furnish the power. So some communities had their own thrashing machine, while others used an individual who was working for himself, fashion in charge for the power.
Did you ever help fill a silo with green corn?
Yes, yes.
Can you describe silos. That?
Yes, I filled silos, had silage cutter, and I used a tractor for power, and a few times. Used steam. Right at first, used steam power to pull a silage cutter. And they had a stronger blower, and they blow that up into the silo, blow it up to the top of the silo, and then it dropped down inside.
What about the kind of corn you use? When did you cut it? How'd you handle it?
The corn. For good silage, the corn must—it's got to be cut while it's green or rather green. They'd let it get along to the, so that the grain would be at least in the milk stage. And the milk stage are a little past, but it must be green so there's plenty of moisture to, so the silage will ferment after it's in the, packed in the silo. And they cut it by hand. At first it was cut by hand. And laid down and laid the stalks, the corn down, in sizes so that you could pick them up and put them on a wagon. And then they went from that. From that they got to corn binders that would cut them and put them in bundles, and then all the bundles on the wagon. But originally it was all real hard labor. You had to cut it by hand, and then go and haul it on wagons, load it on wagons, and that's all heavy work. That's really was hard work.
How about in the silo itself? Was there any danger in a silo in filling with that green corn?
Well,
it seems to me like I've heard of a gas or something that.
Yes, it is. There was some danger because it seemed as though they keep it shut up. If they keep silos shut up, and if it didn't have pretty good ventilation, as the thing was kept running, so that it kept air forcing into it, but it was okay. But otherwise, there was some forms, some gas would be formed, especially if it sat very long without moving, without being active in adding more to it. And we never had any trouble with it around where I was, because we always we'd start in and we would work right through. We never let it set and then start in again. That's real. Never had any trouble, but not that I ever knew of.
Were there very many silos around this part of the country that they filled like that?
Oh yes, well, almost every farmer had a silo. You know, if he had any stock, he had a silo. Yes, most all of them did.
What were silos built out of?
They were built. The original first ones were wood staves, made out of wood staves, tongue and groove wood staves. And then they used iron hoops around them to draw them together, hold them in place. And then they got to building them out of I guess it was concrete. They got on blocks and were fitted together. And then, of course, they used staves or wood hoops or iron hoops on them. I said wood hoops, I think, on the first, but I meant the first ones were the wood staves were even used iron hoops to hold them together, brace them together, hold them in place. They even went to build them out of metal too. They got different. Some kind of blocks, concrete, and some kind of other, I don't know what, not all concrete, but some kind of a compact material that they built out of blocks, and then also got to building them out of metal. They're metal ones also.
What about the period, say, that from your, say, 1915 up to about 1930? What did the families do for entertainment? Did they have a lot of reunions? They have community activities?
Yes, they had some reunions, and they also had they formed clubs, and these clubs would arrange their own entertainment, and the different kinds, and they'd have fish fries and chicken dinners and things like that. In other words, they set up most of their own entertainment. But the main thing that came along was what they called a chautauqua. They had chautauquas each year. Small towns and communities would arrange these chautauquas, and they'd last for about a week. They'd have them every day for about a week, and then they'd have varied entertainment in those at the chautauquas.
What else did they do in those besides entertainment, the chautauquas? In the chautauquas, what did they do besides entertaining? Or the fish or chicken fries? What else did they do in those?
Well, the chautauquas were composed maybe sometimes of a speaker or a play, an entertainment, a varied program in the chautauquas. But the others, where they had their own clubs or fish fries and things, there wasn't too much entertainment. It was mainly a get together and not too much entertainment.
Did they have music, dances?
Sometimes, yes, they often had. Some music and some dances.
Did you have a lot of relatives?
Quite a few. I had quite a few because my father's family was 9 boys and 2 girls. Large family. That was the family of Sebastian Greenham, next, just east of the Durbin County farm. I was known as the Durbin County farm. And then I also had my mother's family was, there were 7 or 8 of those in that family too, so we had quite a few relatives.
Did they get together a lot?
Not mainly. They just would visit each other on weekends, but as the ones that were close enough around. And they're most were around.
How about your own family, brothers and sisters?
I have one sister. I just have one sister. She's still living. She lives in Milan. She's about 4 years younger than I am. She's a widow.
Wilmer, tell us about some other interesting activities about the community that, say, that 1915 up to about 1929 that you can recall.
We had a resident. I guess it's okay to... I'll name it Clifford Drake. And he was from the South Sparta community, and he sold out here and moved up near Anderson, Indiana. And he took two teams of horses before the tractors came in. He took two teams of horses, and I went with him, and we took one team to the buggy, and the other, and he rode the other team. He rode one of the horses of the other team, and we started out. It was a pretty decent fall day, not too cold, and as we went north, yeah, it started to turn cold. And I'll tell you, the second day, we went up about, we went to Greensburg the first day with those two teams. Then the next day, we went up to Knightstown with those two teams, and it really got cold that day. I was the coldest I believe I ever was in my life. But then we got warm thawed out that night, and then we went from there on up to, it's near Frankton, which is not too far west, or not too far away from Anderson. And we took those two teams up to a farm that he bought up there. And his wife was originally from here near North Sparta. They moved up to farm up there, and he would have been a good one to have told you about this stuff, because he lived here and then he went up there. He could have probably given us, but he died. He passed away just last year. He was 94. And passed away last year.
How about some experiences with your first automobile?
Well, I don't.
When did you buy your first one? You personally?
Oh. Gosh, I don't know.
1920s?
I presume so. It would have been in the 20s. I don't know nothing unusual that I remember of now.
You don't remember the work you put on it to keep it running?
Oh, yes. We put a lot of work on it. One time we... I don't know when that was. That's later than the 20s, so I think. I'd been in the 30s, probably.
That's okay.
But anyway, we went on a trip. We called it a trip at that time. We and two or three other, it was two cars of us, we went to Madison. And it was a real hot day, real hot, and had a lot of tar trouble. I even had to borrowed a tar from the other person to put on the car to get home. He used to kid me a lot about that. Did you ever know Doc Beckett?
No.
Marcel, you never knew him, I guess. But Doc Beckett was down the others with the car, and he always kidded me about having loaned me a tire to get home. It was on a Sunday, and it was before the days when there were very many service stations. You could hardly find a service station.
I've heard about hill climbs and like maybe road racing. Was there very much of that? Used to be. The automobiles, I guess, when they were originally built, had difficulty climbing steep hills. You remember any contests around here and anything like that?
No, don't believe. I never got into any of those. Yeah, that's true. That Yeah, the car that could pull some hills and maybe pull them in high or such a like as that. Well, then they compared that in a lot of instances.
What about county activities, Wilmer, like county fairs?
The county fairs were quite popular back in the early days. That was something that most everyone liked to go to the county fair. They were very distant, very much of a distance, but they had what they called the accommodations on the railroad, the accommodation train, local, which run daily, and you could go take a morning accommodation and go on the train and then spend the day at the fair and then return the same day by the same accommodation train. And they were quite common and pretty well patronized.
Okay, this is Earl Mann again. This is the end of the tape, talking to Wilmer Grinham at Moores Hill, May the 15th, 1990.